Eight Hargeisa Goat Bubble, a timeless tale of boom and bust, profit and loss, and the first short story ever published in the Financial Times. We join a young reporter by a dusty runway.
Good afternoon. I'm Stephanie Flanders, broadcasting live from beside the runway at Hargeisa Airport in what was once British Somaliland, now part of a Somalia which may be on the verge of falling apart. Behind me, you can hear a UN plane is about to land, bringing much-needed humanitarian supplies to this war-scarred former British colony in the Horn of Africa. Far away in Europe today, government ministers are yet again discussing the economic plight of Africa. But here in a disintegrating country, people face just another day. Good grief. I'm sorry about this, but a three-legged goat has just run past me onto the runway. Well, more like tottered, really.
Excuse me.
A man in a pinstripe suit is running after the goat just as this plane is landing. Oh, dear, it's too late for the pilot to pull out.
Run, little goat!
The man's bravely trying to save his goat. Oh, hang on, no, it looks more like... Why would he want to push his goat in front of a plane? Ah.
Oh.
The next train due at platform 1 is at 3:30 to London.
What's wrong with this?
British Rail apologises that the 3:30 to London has been delayed to facilitate the fitting of its snowplow.
Excuse me, but I think that machine is there purely for decorative purposes. I do not believe that Joseph Fry and Sons have made dandelion-flavoured chocolate bars since the end of rationing. That confectionery would almost certainly be 30 or 40 years past its best-before date.
Well, the shop is shut. And that was me last pound.
I am surprised you managed to get the coin in the threepenny bit slot.
I wonder why it was so stiff, all right.
Here, have some of this.
Oh, that's very good of you. What is it?
Dried goat.
Well, it's stopped snowing.
That is a mercy.
Do you know something? This is delicious.
Sit here. I can move this.
If you don't mind me asking, why are you carrying such a large quantity of dried goat?
I am originally from Somaliland. Oh, it is a long story. Sorry, the name is Bihi, Dr. Ibrahim Bihi.
Jude, I lack a last name being an orphan from Ireland. Oh, please, tell the story. I like stories.
Very well, if you are sure. Once upon a time, not that long ago, I eked a meager living, exploiting a fundamental structural discrepancy in the price of goats.
Ah, yes. You've lost me.
I must apologize. My degree is in economics, and it has had an unfortunate effect on my conversational English. Allow me to begin again. My story is a sorry tale of the dismal science in the heart of the dark continent.
Lost me.
A story of economics in Africa.
Ah, Grant, have you now? Have you any more of that dried goat?
Take a leg. Mind the hoof.
On you go.
After the latest war against Ethiopia and multifarious clan uprisings, the somewhat surprising defection of Somalia from the Soviet sphere of influence to the American in response to Ethiopia's rather surprising defection from the American to the Soviet, all leading to the confiscation of my property, the destruction of my possessions, and my repeated relocation due to the toing and froing of multiple overlapping insurgencies, clan wars, and government reprisals, I eventually find myself in Hargeisa, owning only a goat.
What was she called?
Who?
the goat.
She was a goat. She didn't have a name.
Oh, I see. I find it hard to follow a story without a name. It's a weakness in me.
You call her anything you like.
Can I call her Ethel? I have a fondness for that name. It's the name of the unmarried sister of the orphanage cook.
Feel free to think of the goat as Ethel. Now,
thank you. Let me just... Ethel the goat. Ah, yes, I see her as clear as day now. Go on.
The forced sale of a goat in wartime is unlikely to realize the full value of the goat.
Hang on. The forced sale of Ethel in wartime is unlikely to realize the full value of Ethel. I follow you. Go on.
Alternatively, the slaughter and personal consumption of the goat, while keeping one alive in the short term, would lead in the medium term to having no goat and no money. In the long term, with neither assets, nor capital, nor cash flow, death would inevitably ensue.
That wouldn't be good.
No, it would not. Luckily, my PhD had been devoted to a study of the exploitation of price discrepancies in imperfect markets. I thus resolved to apply my knowledge of temporary market inefficiencies to my goat.
To Ethel. Right, gotcha.
Now all I needed was a buyer who was obliged, for whatever reason, to pay more than the standard market price for my goat. This final, or ultimate goat, on which all my hopes rested, had only three legs due to a shrapnel from a mine stepped on some weeks previously by my second last, or penultimate goat, on the trek to Hargeisa.
Great stuff, second goat, call him Charles. what a lovely... No, better blow him up before we bond.
The surviving goat's movements were slow, and my search for opportunities was limited to the immediate vicinity of Hargeisa Airport, where I was sleeping at the side of the runway, for the UN presence at the airport made it a safer place for the homeless, friendless wanderer.
Whoa, there. That's a fierce amount of new information. Just hang on a second while I visualize that. No, I'm getting nothing. I'm not really that familiar with Africa. Or to be honest, with airports, you know, I usually come over on Slattery's Superbus on the B&I ferry through Holyhead. Sligo. Yeah, Knock Airport. The Medjugorje flight coming in low over the bog. Clear as day, okay. Remove the drizzle. Clouds. Fog. Drain the bog. Covered in sand. Perfect. On you go.
I thought long. I thought hard. I ate the final remnants of my penultimate goat, which I had cured in salt and carried on the tottering back of my ultimate goat, Hargeisa. I came up with a plan. The next day, I ate the mutilated fourth leg of my ultimate goat as I refined the plan. I had neither friend, nor relative, nor roof, nor occupation. I had in all this world one solitary three-legged goat. This poor goat, which I had come to love. Its hazel eyes, its trim beard, its dry dugs. This poor beast comprised all the surplus value I possessed. It was the rock of capital on which I stood, raised above the perilous sea in which so many of my countrymen around me desperately swam, or, ceasing their struggles, drowned.
The 3:30 train to London has been delayed due to denial.
This is delicious.
That poor goat was my stepping stone to a safer world, a better world. Some greater island raised higher above the perilous waves of life. My first stepping stone to the capitals of capital. To London, Tokyo, New York, all thrusting so far above the sea of subsistence that the people there think the world dry land, so that their inhabitants till recently flew from great island to great island far above the sea of suffering, never looking down. Some glanced perhaps out of the windows of their planes, but if they saw us, they must have thought us waving, not drowning, for they did not come to save us. Not from England, who once owned our country, who took over the Gulf slave trade from the Arab slavers and built Bristol and Liverpool from the profits. Not from America, who built her wealth upon the surplus labor of 20 million African slaves. There was no Marshall Plan for Africa.
What happened to Ethel the goat?
Hmm?
He seems to have forgotten her plight entirely. Look at her, teetering bravely on her three legs, yet still standing proudly erect, the hint of a tear in her hazel eye.
Oh, I waited until the daily UN food plane was committed to its final approach. As its wheels touched down at the far end of the dusty runway, and I saw the puffs of dust, I drove my goat out of the long grass and into the middle of the runway, and leaving her standing bewildered and blindfold where the tire tracks were thickest, I ran back into the long grass.
Oh no.
Oh yes. I went straight to the control tower and demanded to see the airport manager. In Somaliland, it is the custom to pay a man double the market price if you accidentally kill his beast. I had the price of two goats in my hand before the plane had finished taxiing back to the terminal.
Marvelous! What'd you do with the money?
I went to the market, of course, and bought two goats.
Mm, they could be friends to each other.
The next day, I drove the two goats into the path of a turboprop from Riyadh. I went to the control tower, demanded to see the airport manager.
I get you, because in Somaliland, it is the custom to pay the man double the...
I see you appreciate the genius of my glorious notion. I had the price of four goats in my hand before the plane had finished taxiing back to the terminal.
One, two, and two is four. Four and four is eight, 16...
I went straight to the airport manager.
Million... And the three, and a trillion. And thus you quickly became infinitely wealthy.
Sadly, no. It is the tragedy of market opportunities. They are killed by those who love them. The market abhors a price discrepancy. But oh, it is beautiful to watch the market corrected by the invisible hand. The success of my glorious notion was noted by others. And by the third day, impoverished and desperate rivals were selling all their few pitiful possessions to buy a goat in the market and driving them onto the runway ahead of me.
Hold on there a minute. There's an invisible hand.
Yes.
There's an invisible hand driving goats onto the runway.
Yes.
So, well, now we're in some kind of ghost story.
No, it's not a real invisible hand.
How can you tell?
The invisible hand of Adam Smith, the great Scottish economist, born in 1723.
Adam Smith had an invisible hand?
No, he invented the invisible hand.
Ah, have you know? So he lost his hand in an accident and made another one out of glass, I suppose.
No. No. I occasionally worry about the future of a society in which nobody understands the true basis of that society's wealth. You are familiar with the words, love thy neighbor as thyself?
I am.
Well, the invisible hand is as fundamental to the economic health of your society as those noble words are to its spiritual health.
So the invisible hand is like the Holy Ghost.
Look, the invisible hand is a metaphor. It's not real. The invisible hand is a poetic term for the power of market forces to swiftly and efficiently deliver capital and goods to where they are most needed, with nobody in command, nobody ordering it so. In a free market, increased demand drives up prices and profits. New suppliers move into the market to take that profit until oversupply drives prices back down, whereupon some suppliers leave to use their capital more profitably elsewhere. The invisible hand regulates both supply and demand far more efficiently than the clumsy iron fist of state control. Capital is always in movement to where it is most needed.
I have you. So the invisible hand drove the goats onto the runway?
Yes, for there the profits were highest.
Do you know, I think I see where this might be going.
Yeah.
Yes. Our competition in the market that afternoon drove up the price of goats.
I give you 50. I give you 65 for goat. Here, 75. Here, 75.
80 for goat, 80. Sold.
Thus, the market price of two goats paid to us that morning at the airport for each one of our slaughtered goats was by that afternoon unable to buy us two goats in the market.
I'm lost. Sure, didn't you all have the price of two goats? Why wouldn't you just buy two goats with it?
We had the old price of two goats, that morning's price. But the price in the market is not a fixed thing. It is set by supply and demand.
Extraordinary scenes here at Hargeisa Goat Market as the impoverished citizens bid frantically for the few goats on offer, driving prices higher and yet higher.
350.
Like, at the end of a race meeting at Limerick Junction, if I wanted a chalk ice and the fellow selling the chalk ices had only one left and another fellow wanted a two, one of us might have to offer more than the normal price for it to make sure we got it.
Exactly.
And that's the invisible hand giving the chalk ice to the lad who wants it the most.
Yes.
Brilliant. I understand economics.
Sold. To the airport.
Goat hyperinflation had set in. For at the airport the next morning, we demanded double the new market price for the goats we drove into the path of an old Aeroflot TU-144. The airport manager agreed to this new rate of compensation. Thus, the compensation now being indexed to the market price of the goat, where the price of the goat is N and the compensation is 2N, capital was in effect free. No matter how high the goat price soared, the fresh capital for the next round of goat finance soared along with it.
Fascinating. What does the N stand for?
What N?
Oh, where the price of the goat is N and the compensation is 2N.
It stands for any number.
Any number begins with an A.
No, in mathematics, N stands for any number. It is a mathematical formula. Whatever the price of the goat, which we shall call N, the compensation for the goat would be twice that, 2N. It remains true no matter what the number is.
Oh, you were speaking mathematics. Can I translate it into English?
Be my guest.
Okay. Where the price of the goat is £1 million, the compensation is £2 million. Ah, yeah. Got it. Carry on.
As you can see, the tap was now held artificially open and a speculative bubble made inevitable. Soon, the doubled and redoubled prices paid out by the airport manager had reached such giddy heights that the merchant class grew greedy and joined in. No other asset could offer so high a rate of return as the goat. So capital was now diverted into goats and out of every other asset class. And all but the goat traders were starved of investment.
What am I bid for this fine, healthy goat?
All of my money.
All my wife's money. My house.
Her fertilizer factory.
My coffee crop.
My soul.
Gone. To the man at the front with the short horns and tail.
Word had spread, and men drove goats in any condition to Hargeisa from all over Somaliland, and even the other statelets of the disintegrating Somalia, from Puntland, from Middle Shabelle, and Lower Juba in the chaotic south, even from Ethiopia. The market was soon flooded with goats, many of them sick or lame. However, this did not matter, for the demand for goats had become infinite. The runway, being entirely unprotected around its perimeter on either side, was the platonic ideal of a free market. There were no barriers to entry. However, planes were by now reluctant to land in Hargeisa.
Too many goats on the runway?
The goats were not the problem.
Not?
Yes. Certain economic firebrands, frozen out of the goat market, had attempted to introduce the cow as an element of trade at the airport's morning meetings.
Hmm.
The goat cartel fought this fiercely as it endangered their near monopoly and threatened an uncontrolled overnight devaluation of the goat, which could badly shake confidence in the market. Also, the pilots were very unhappy. Any decent-sized aircraft could plow through almost unlimited numbers of the lightweight native Somali goat without risking much more than a puncture. But a cow. More importantly, the UN, as issuers of fresh capital and guarantors of the liquidity of the market, opposed the introduction of the cow. The replacement cost of an aircraft dwarfed even the inflated cost of the goats, and the UN made an informal deal that if we kept the cows off the runway, they would continue to pay out for the goats.
That was good. Can I...
Feel free.
Oh, a whole leg. Thanks.
Of course, some fiscal conservatives within the UN wished to unilaterally halt the goat payments entirely. It was, however, too late to do this. An enormous reallocation of capital had already occurred, and the personal wealth of the entire Hargeisa middle class was by now tied up in goats, as indeed was that of many enterprising UN employees and most of the pilots and crews flying the route. To abolish the payments would have led to a collapse in market confidence, the panicked sale of goats, a flooded goat market, and subsequent price collapses that would have ruined most.
This is Stephanie Flanders of the BBC reporting live from Hargeisa Goat Market. The wealth generated by this fabled goat market, some would say infamous, has boosted economic growth to the point where many Western commentators are calling the country the African tiger. Yet some economists and observers are worried that here in the Horn of Africa, a bubble is inflating.
600 from the man in the back with the glasses.
In recent months, goats here have entered what you might call a classic momentum market, where rising prices draw in more and more investors keen to make a quick profit, which in turn drives the prices higher still. But the cost of a goat here now vastly exceeds the capital returns which are possible over its lifetime from sale of milk, cheese, or ultimately meat and skin. Investors are simply relying on the fact that prices will carry on going up. But in economics, you tend to say that if something's unsustainable, it will eventually stop. The price of goats just can't rise forever. To understand what's going on, I'm talking to Dr. Ibrahim Bihi, an economist here and the man who revolutionised the sleepy Hargeisa goat market. Dr. Bihi, some would say this goat craze has become a mania.
A severe shortage of goats and infinite demand has certainly led to excesses.
And yet you yourself remain fully invested in goats. Indeed, you're here bidding for goats today.
Yes.
Why?
Vast fortunes can still be made in strong momentum markets, regardless of fundamental values, as long as you are not the one left holding the goat when the reversion to fundamental value occurs.
It sounds like you're saying, as long as the music's playing, you've got to get up and dance.
Precisely.
Going once, going twice, 750 from the very big lady in the back there. Sold!
Through the gate beside us, a steady stream of goats are arriving now for auction from all over the region. And, well, I have to say, they're not up to much.
Yes, I would agree that the quality of the goats has certainly suffered.
And what is this?
A goat?
I am very unimpressed with this goat.
I wish to auction it.
What kind of a goat is it?
It is a small but sturdy Highland goat of a type very common in a Jabada.
Very small.
But very sturdy.
I think the goat market would need to take an unusually large cut of the sale price of this rare goat to justify, to protect...
15%?
40.
20.
30.
25.
Done. Here's your tag. Don't lose it.
Thank you.
I heard nothing. Drive your goat over there.
I'm Stephanie Flanders, reporting for the BBC in Hargeisa Goat Market.
6:30 train for London has been delayed due to euphoria.
But the sheer length of the boom was now leading to increased confidence. There was a loosening in credit. It seemed madness not to lend to a man who could pay you back handsomely the next day. And as a creditor, once you'd borrowed and repaid with interest a couple of times, the banks began to persuade you to borrow more. Indeed, as the banks began to package and resell the goat loans, it soon became in the bank's interest to expand the market.
I'm Stephanie Flanders, reporting again for the BBC in Hargeisa Goat Market. I'm here again with Dr. Ibrahim Bihi, the man credited with making the Hargeisa Goat Market the global phenomenon it is today. Dr. Bihi, some of these buyers have flown in from as far away as Switzerland, New York and Basildon. They have no background in goats. Do they really know what they're doing?
It is true that buying individual goats can be a tricky business, requiring an expert eye. But that problem has been solved by securitization.
Well, securitization is a rather new idea. Could you just explain it to our listeners?
Overseas buyers no longer purchase their goats directly. They purchase a bundle of goat-backed securities. Rather than owning a goat, they own a share of their future revenue stream from a number of goats. This spreads the risk. Each goat-backed package is rated by the ratings agencies, and thus their quality is assured.
But some say the system's inherently flawed because an agency who refuses to give high ratings will lose business to an agency with looser standards. And you have to say, I mean, some of the goats being auctioned here today, they may be rated AAA by the ratings agencies, but they look pretty subprime to me.
All the mathematical models say that this should not matter. The price of goats has never fallen nationally, year on year in Somaliland, since records began.
And when did records begin?
Last month, when we set up the rating system.
But the other issue is that many have borrowed to get into this market. The total value of goat-related loans, I think, now exceeds national income in this country.
Yes, it is a tribute to the flexibility of our young and dynamic banking sector. You see, we are not hampered by over-regulation. Thus, we can experiment with absolutely free markets. The leading bankers of many smaller nations, such as Iceland, Ireland, and England, have come here to learn from our success.
But there must be a natural limit to this boom. I mean, OK, what happens if you run out of goats?
True, the physical shortage of actual goats has recently been something of a bottleneck, which has threatened to slow the market's rate of growth to something dangerously close to its natural level. But the market is evolving all the time.
Well, it's true. There is now so much money to be made here in goat-related financial services. Everyone tells me the market's attracting the country's brightest minds.
Oh, yes. And they've come up with a magnificent range of goat futures and goat options. They are developing some highly innovative goat derivative products. This trade in young, unborn, and even theoretical goats will allow money to continue to flow into the market, regardless of the existence of actual goats.
Derivative products. Is that like all them cheap drinks in red cans that spell Coca-Cola with a K in the hope of fooling the less literate?
No. A derivative product is one whose value derives from something else that is not part of it. In this case, a goat derivative derives its value from the price of physical goats, but owns no goat itself. Thus, derivatives can be created in unlimited quantities, though the thing they derive their price from may be in very limited quantities.
So they derive their value from the price of goats in the same way a betting slip derives its value from the speed of a horse in the Grand National?
Yes, an excellent metaphor. You could extend it. The bookies are the rating agency who analyze the data for you and then issue the odds. The odds are the rating that says this is your chance of getting your money back.
So you don't need to own the actual horse or know anything about the horse in order to bet an unlimited amount on the performance of the horse?
Or in this case, goat, yes. But derivatives have one immense advantage over betting slips. The banks will not loan you 30 times your assets to bet on horses.
But they will loan you 30 times your assets to bet on goats?
No, not on goats per se, but yes, on goat-backed securities, because goat-backed securities are rated AAA, after a careful and judicious analysis of all the data since records began. And thus, there is no risk.
I see. They're a dead sort.
Yes.
What am I bid for this fine goat derivative product? The mezzanine tranche of a prime A-rated collateralized debt obligation. Ideal for an ambitious bank's off-balance sheet entity.
8,000, 8,000.
Sold.
So crucial to the economy were goats now, and so fatal to our people any collapse in the goat market, that the UN appointed a high commissioner with special responsibility for goats. Reassured that the UN wouldn't let the market collapse, prices soared higher. It had become a one-way bet. The airport manager had by now begun to fly in goats to sell at market for nearly twice what he was paying out, thus financing further imports. This meant both more goats and more planes arriving to run them over. Now that everybody was benefiting, there seemed no need for the boom ever to end. True, the UN budget for Somaliland was paying out increasingly large compensation fees to the owners of dead goats, but one of the first moves by the UN High Commissioner with special responsibility for goats was to make the goat compensation fund self-funding by hedging it.
Would the goats not eat it?
What?
The hedging.
It was not that kind of hedge. A hedge is a protection against risk. In this case, they hedged it in goat futures.
Oh, goat futures, right. You mean like death and being made into a handbag?
No. A futures contract is, in this case, a contract to buy a goat at a future date, but at a price set today. If the price of goat soars higher than the set price by that date, you make a profit because you can now buy the goat at the old, lower fixed price and then sell it at the new one.
Ah.
Yes. Now, every time the UN pushed up the price of goats by paying out double the market price, it regained the money fourfold as its goat futures contract soared in value. The drawback was that the slaughter on the runways each day was by now so great that it was becoming a hazard to land, and it could take till nightfall to execute the day's quota of goats.
And so that finally brought the boom to a natural and a peaceful end.
You underestimate the ingenuity of economists. The problem was solved by bringing in an electronic goat accident and compensatory system, or GACS, to replace the cumbersome physical system. Now, instead of herding your one, then two, then four, then eight, then 16 goats onto the runway each afternoon, you simply input your goat numbers into the GACS. The airport manager input all the flights due in that day. Each flight was allocated its goats, and the compensation due each trader came up on the big screen.
Ah, lovely.
The numbers we dealt in were by now so vast that the few remaining physical goats were a financial irrelevance of purely historical interest, and indeed a source of slight embarrassment to the newly wealthy traders of goat derivatives.
Shoo, shoo, shoo. Oh.
The vast new electronic goat exchange replaced the old dung-stinking central goat market, from which the last surviving obsolete goats were released to wander where they would.
Out of it!
Some missed the blood-soaked runway of the old system, the shouts of the traders, the roar of the engines, and the shriek of the goats. But all acknowledged the increased efficiency of the new system. Often, two full trade cycles could be executed in a day, doubling turnover. By the end of the year, Hargeisa contained 14,000 millionaires, and the UN were running a paper profit of over $1 trillion.
Then what happened?
Now that we were trading virtual goats, a peculiar lassitude began to sweep through the trading classes. Oh, certainly, paupers were becoming millionaires, and millionaires were soon billionaires by merely getting out of bed and showing their faces at the beautiful new goat exchange. But the heady joy of the early days had gone. The millionaires envied the billionaires, while the trillionaires feared the millionaires. Trade became vicious, yet meaningless. Everyone was growing richer, yet somehow more anxious. Without a solid goat to give value to the figure, one's wealth only had meaning in relation to another's wealth and was thus never enough. Someone somewhere always had another zero. On the day I became a billionaire, I felt poorer than when I had owned but a single goat. What could you do but trade more, trade harder?
Sure, I know the feeling. Me pocket money back in the orphanage was 10 pence a week. I remember the traumatic shock when I discovered Waxy Tracy was getting a quid.
Precisely. The social anxiety and sense of failure felt by the millionaires and billionaires in a city of trillionaires caused despair, self-harm, even suicide. Trade went on all night now. Men hardly slept or saw their wives or families. They spoke of nothing but goats, yet had soon forgotten what the word goat had once referred to. Many younger traders had never seen a goat. Yet the new wealth was meritocratic. Old money in property or cocoa or oil was easily overtaken by that of young, brash goat traders who better understood these new rules. Confused by all I had wrought, and by now so rich that there was no word in common use that could describe my wealth, I returned one day to the old Hargeisa airport runway, the site of my glorious notion. It was disused now, of course, for our wealthy nation had outgrown the source of its wealth. The transport of goats was no longer necessary, and we no longer needed aid. Our luxury goods arrived from China, Germany, and Japan through the new modern airport and electronic goat exchange on the far side of Hargeisa. The long grass had spread from both edges to reclaim the old runway. And there I found, munching quietly, disregarded in the long grass of the abandoned airfield, two goats.
Nell and Mick. Ah, there they are, as clear as day before me. Though grumpy, they love each other. And what happened then?
What? What do you mean, all gone? Collapsed? What? Are you telling me it's worth nothing? But why? Well, make them confident again. How should I know?
And so you lost everything?
Yes, but who could have predicted that?
Oh, who indeed?
The dream had ended. And it all went away. The luxuries, the money, the gleaming towers of steel and glass. The people lost faith in the system. Good companies followed bad into ruin. Now all that had seemed sane behavior in the long dream of the bubble looked criminal madness in the cold light of day. Heroes of the goat market were fired, divorced, jailed for the very ambition and creativity that had made them heroes. All fell apart. The delicate fabric of society unraveled. I, again, had nothing. It was as though it had never been. I cut a stout stick from the bushes and slept at the edge of the runway to escape my hostile creditors, investigators, prosecutors.
What did you do then? Poor, alone, and friendless again in poor Somaliland.
I had learnt my lesson. I had heard that the U.S. were conducting tank exercises across the border in Djibouti. In Djibouti, it is the custom to pay a man triple the market price if you accidentally kill his beast. I raised my stout stick and drove my two goats north before me through the minefields. But that is another story. Look, it has begun to snow.
I like snow.
British Rail apologises for the late arrival of the 3:30 train to London. This was due to goats on the tracks.
Please, tell me the story. I like stories. It'll speed the journey.
Very well. Please, after you.
No. After you.
I just put the bag of goat legs up here.
In just a few minutes, what's become known as the Big Bang will officially take place here in the City of London.
Oh, now this is interesting. You don't mind if I listen?
Britain's banks and financial markets will be deregulated to create an entirely new way of doing business in the city. The open outcry trading in the pit that we associate with the stock exchange, that'll all be gone, replaced by electronic screen-based trading using computers and telephones.
Why is this interesting?
Well, you see, I am heading to the City of London myself. In the City of London, it is the custom to pay a man quadruple the normal salary if he has the experience of deregulated markets.
Dr. Jekyll, you are one of Britain's leading economists. What will this exciting new world of self-regulation and financial innovation mean for the City of London?
Well, everyone now acknowledges that over-regulation of the markets is one of the great economic curses of our time. From the Soviet Union to the UK, state control of markets, of banking and of the financial sector has been an economic disaster, leading to recession and stagnation, high unemployment and low growth. That model has failed.
Well, I understand this is a very exciting day for free market economists like you, but what will Big Bang mean for ordinary men and women?
Oh, I think the 7th of October 1986 will prove to be one of the most important days in the history of, well, not just the City of London, but of Britain. This is a great day for democracy. Now, it could take 20 years, it could take a little longer, but I think you will ultimately see very big changes. For the first time in English history, the ordinary person will be able to invest. The poor will be able to own their own homes, and at last, banks can innovate. You'll see revolutionary new financial products. Securitization and credit derivatives will move risk to those who can bear it best. It will make for a much more stable financial system.
He's right, you know. This would be a very good time for you to get into the market. Maybe buy a flat, invest in equities.
But I only have a pound. Oh, and it's stuck in a chocolate machine.
Do you know, I don't think that is going to be a problem.
In the Great Hargeisa Goat Bubble, written and adapted for radio by Julian Goff, Hugh Quashie played Dr. Behe, and Sam O'Mahony Adams was Jude. Damien Lynch was Dr. Jekyll, and Darren Hart, the goat seller. Stephanie Flanders was herself. Sound design was by David Chilton, and the director was Di Spears.
Now, in a couple of minutes after the news here on Radio 4, it'll be Gardener's Question Time.